from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. It started with a bike ride in San Francisco on September 25th, 1992. About 50 people cycled in a pack along Market Street, hoping to earn some respect from drivers who sometimes ignored them or edged them off the road. They called it the commute clot, and today it's known as critical mass, a movement that's spread worldwide. Supporters say it promotes cycling and the rights of bicyclists, but critics say it is illegal, clogs traffic, and antagonizes drivers. We'll talk about critical mass on its 20th anniversary and its effects on the city. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum. With roots in Stockholm in the 70s, critical mass began 20 years ago tomorrow in San Francisco when it was initially called Commute Clot and featured about 50 people cycling in pack along Market Street hoping to earn some respect from drivers who sometimes ignored them or edged them off the road. A cycling event with no apparent leadership, the movement known now as critical mass has spread across the globe with thousands of bicyclists. Its proponents argue that it has raised consciousness of the importance of bicycles and has made cities like San Francisco more amenable to bikes and bike riders, while detractors argue that critical mass participants clog traffic, disobey the laws, and disrupt normal city functions. This forum hour, we turn our attention to critical mass, where the movement began, where it's been in the past two decades, and where it is headed. Joining us in studio is Chris Carlson, co-founder of Critical Mass. He was also part of the first bike ride back on September 25th, 1992, and since has participated in Critical Mass rides in Milan, Vancouver, and Porto Alegre, Brazil. And by the way, the Critical Mass celebration runs from the 24th to the 30th at the Critical Mass Welcome Center over at 518 Valencia, and there will be a farewell ride on September 30th. And welcome, Chris Carlson.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us. Also good to have Hugh Dandrude, who's in studio with Dandrade. I think I got it right.
You got it right.
Yeah. He's founder of SanFranciscoCriticalMass.org blog. He started his blog in 2009 to increase communication among critical mass and wider communities. And welcome, Hugh Dandrade.
Thanks.
Good to have you both here. And we will be talking to Rob Anderson, who's been a longtime critic of critical mass in the course of the hour. But I want to go first to Chris Carlson and talk with you, Chris, about the origins of this. You were on that first ride. What was it like? Can you take us back?
Well, we were in those days, we like to joke about the fact that we kind of all knew each other, all the bicyclists in town. There really weren't so many. Like today, you go down Market Street at any given time, morning or evening, and you have dense clots of bikes routinely. And so it's quite bizarre and delightful to us who were here back in the day.
But
in
they were mostly messengers back in those days.
Well, that was the impression people had. There were actually quite a lot of us who were daily commuters even then, but not so many that filled the streets as they do today. And that was part of our motivation, was we were treated as, you know, idiots, second-class citizens, children, grow up, be an adult, buy a car, as though that was somehow an act of adulthood as opposed to an act of stupidity, in my opinion. But as the case may be,
just alienated a lot of people.
I understand that lots of people have to drive. I don't blame individual people for buying cars or being in them, actually. I think it's a common choice that we're stuck with in a society. We live in a car-centric culture. We lived in a very car-centric society in the 1980s and early 1990s when we started Critical Mass. Unfortunately, it has hardly changed. You know, there's a lot more people bicycling today. That's great. But the fundamental infrastructure of our society is entirely dedicated to the housing and movement of private automobiles, with very little exception.
So, having stated what you did, what were the expectations as opposed to what's been realized here? I mean, were the expectations as it moved along and got bigger and bigger, perhaps inflated?
We had no idea. We started the ride as we said at the beginning, to ride home together in a group and make space for ourselves on the road in a way that we wouldn't be shunted to the side and put in danger. And so by creating an organized coincidence of bicyclists to fill the streets once a month, we thought we would create an open space, partly to have a safe ride and partly to raise our own profile as cyclists, but also to create a public space, because our society has reduced most of our activities to buying and selling.
Well, you're also very environmental-minded almost from the beginning.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I come out of a long tradition with anti-nuclear politics since the 1970s, all kinds of different environmental initiatives. Hugh and I both worked on a magazine called Processed World, which was the underside of the information age back in the 80s before we were all on the internet, and came out of downtown as an underground magazine. So we had a long, pedigree of being involved in various oppositional efforts. And so this was a new way to try to reconnect our daily choice to bicycle, which is just one part of our general choices of how to change life, to a broader politics, a politics that really requires people to meet horizontally in public places. And this was a phenomenal surprise to us how much this worked.
Well, it also worked in the sense that where are we at now? About a 20-time?
About a 20-fold increase in daily cycling, yeah. And part of that's, some people will give the Bicycle Coalition in San Francisco a lot of that credit. We tend to think, without a mass seizure of the streets by thousands of bicyclists on a monthly basis for all these years, it would have not been the political energy to actually change anything on the streets. And frankly, they're not changed nearly enough. The little bits of improvements we've had, the bike lanes are far better than nothing, but they're really so shallow compared to what they could be.
You also talk about the role of the Ted White movie in all this?
There's actually two movies that Ted's done. One is The Return of the Scorcher, which we were watching in October of 1992, which was a half-an-hour documentary about the return of the bicycle as a means of everyday transportation. The title is derived from the 1890s when there were actually 5,000 to 8,000 bicyclists in San Francisco protesting in the streets in favor of asphalt and good roads, which people didn't remember until some years after Critical Mass and Hank Chapot dug it up. But Ted's movie had a guy describing traffic patterns in China, looking down from his hotel room in Shanghai where there was no traffic lights and no traffic police. And somehow this huge flow of traffic would just be going along with all these bicycles and cars and trucks. And then suddenly there'd be this huge buildup on the side of more and more cyclists just building up and building. Suddenly he said, they reached critical mass and they broke through. And we were like, oh, of course.
There's our name. That's
the name.
I want to, of course, bring Hugh into this discussion. But when did the shift take place to the international? I mean, you, as I said in my introduction, you've been in Milan and Vancouver, about the only cities big cities that don't have this are the cities that have great bicycle routes like Amsterdam.
They've even had critical masses in those cities earlier on, but they mostly don't last there in places where people feel like they don't identify it as a subculture of bicyclists because bicycling is in the fabric of everyday life and everybody does it.
I remember that happening really early. It was around
93. The shift, you mean?
The shift to it spreading to other cities. I mean, first it spread to Berkeley, and then there was word it was spreading to cities around the world almost immediately. So we were getting, faxes back then. Faxes from London and from Australia and from Paris.
Almost seems nostalgic to talk about getting faxes.
It sure does. And then we were getting these funny messages with these at symbols. Those were the first emails I ever saw, where people emailing us and emailing Chris and asking, how do we start a critical mass ride? And so right about then, I think 94, we put together a book that was a little booklet, How to Make Your Own Critical Mass. And we sent it out via the mail and paper out to people because it didn't occur to us at that time to make a website. And it was fantastic to see it spreading from one city to another and really feeling like we were part of and I still feel this way, I think we're part of a large-scale, decentralized grassroots movement.
Global critical mass, I think it would be appropriate to call. And it certainly has helped this city of San Francisco to become a more bicycle-friendly city. And one can say that about many of the cities where critical mass has taken hold. And you know many of the complaints, of course, about critical mass, and we'll get into those, and we'll hear certainly from callers on those. But what about, it's kind of issues that somebody like Ken Garcia raised about the landscape being reformed, about too much political power, for example, in places like San Francisco and Berkeley, where you remove lanes and you remove parking places and that kind of, complaint.
Well, I wouldn't speak to that quite readily. The problem with that point of view is that the assumption is that the status quo late 20th century is somehow normal and that has always been that way. The fact is there was a huge struggle in American cities in the 1920s over how streets would be used. And the motordom lobbyists won that war by convincing people that there was some connection between personal freedom and the American way of life and the use of a private automobile and the ability to move it wherever you wanted and park it wherever you wanted whenever you felt like it. And that's just a phenomenon of the late 20th century. It's very determined in history by the availability of cheap oil, by a certain, Pax Americana imposed on the rest of the world to make it that way, et cetera, et cetera. Those days are over historically. One way or another, it's not going to be like that anymore. And so a lot of people who insist that all, 40% of the actual land of San Francisco is covered in asphalt. for the purposes of, you know, housing private automobiles in public place. This is our commons. We could be growing food out there in a bunch of those places. We could certainly have a few panhandles crisscrossing the city. I was putting out a pamphlet for that in 1987 for a city of panhandles, where you just have greenways that you can make your way across the city without having to interact with a lot of motorized traffic, where pedestrians could be at ease, bicyclists could pass through, wild animals would have corridors to move through the urban environment with, which they sorely need. And so it would be a part of a bigger transformation. And that's always been part of our vision of what it could be. And so the critiques, everything should be just focused on cars and car convenience. Well, it isn't already. It's gridlock out there today. And by adding more or maintaining lots of space for cars, you only increase gridlock.
You also increased a good deal of antagonism. And as I said, we can talk about that. But by 1997, then Mayor Willie Brown was cracking down on critical mass. And maybe we can talk about what happened then and what the impact was on the ride. And have you ever recovered, in terms of numbers?
Oh, well, you know what's an interesting fact is that when Willie Brown cracked down on the ride in 1997, the ridership on Critical Mass just went through the roof. I mean, it brought everybody out to support our ride in a big way. And at the same time, Dave Snyder, who was the director of the San Francisco Bike Coalition at that time, saw the membership of the Bike Coalition, which was a very, very small organization then.
That shot up enormously.
That shot up
by
50%. Yeah. And he told me that he personally thanked Willie Brown for the help. And
what former Mayor Brown said in response to that?
I doubt if you can say it on the air.
No, we can't say it on the air. Okay, I just wanted to clarify. Yeah. Well, it's let's talk about though some of the criticism. I mean, there has been a lot of motorist antagonism, and maybe notwithstanding some of the things that you both have pointed out, there are people out there, and I'm sure we'll hear. Well, let's hear from Rob Anderson, who's been a longtime critic of Critical Mass and blogger on transportation issues. In fact, writes a blog called District 5 Daily. And Rob, we have you on the air here. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. What's been your biggest opposition where Critical Mass is concerned?
It's District 5 Diary, by the way, not Daily. Critical Mass is an enormous imposition on the people of San Francisco. You know, you talked about Mayor Brown's crackdown in 97. It turned into a riot, and he just basically surrendered the streets to the bicycle people at that time. And there was no longer any effort to crack down. No parade permit, nobody responsible for whatever damage happens during the ride. And they've used the threat of violence to basically bully and intimidate the government of San Francisco and the people of San Francisco.
Forgive me, do you remember who was threatening or what the threats specifically were?
Well, Mayor Brown learned that if he tried to crack down on Critical Mass, there would be a major disturbance in downtown San Francisco. That was the lesson he drew from that incident. And so ever since, it's basically been the bike people bullying the people of San Francisco, deliberately making it difficult for working people to get home from work on the last Friday of the month.
Well,
think that's acceptable.
You also started an injunction against what was supposed to be an environmental-friendly bike plan. And I mean, you're saying essentially, you were saying that the city was rushing into an infrastructure plan without going through the proper channels.
It was clearly illegal under CEQA, the most important environmental law in California. You have to do an environmental study of any project that even might have a negative impact on the environment. The city didn't do that. They thought nobody would challenge it in San Francisco because we're all so politically correct about bicycles now. But obviously they were mistaken, and the courts rebuked them for that attempt.
So is there too much political clout from what we could call the bicycle lobby or those
They take up way too much room in our political life and increasingly on our streets. I mean, there's 464,000 licensed motor vehicles in San Francisco. 35,000 people drive into San Francisco to work every day. Our economy is based on tourism, with rented cars and private cars driving in to visit the city every day. You're going to damage the economy of San Francisco if they continue on this anti-car policy.
And the bike plan that you stopped with lawsuits, you think that would have been defeated on a ballot?
Well, it would never pass. Neither a critical mass or the bicycle plan would be passed by the people of San Francisco if they ever get a chance to vote on it, which City Hall will make sure they don't now.
Well, you're not entirely against this. I mean, aren't you on record as saying maybe a better time for critical mass or something of its sort would be, say, on a Saturday when people aren't caught in commute, or Friday?
Well, yeah, that's what they don't want to do. They don't want to have a planned route and a planned event. You know, so the city has no idea where the critical massers are going to go, and they drive through San Francisco disrupting traffic for 2 or 3 hours. So, you know, and by the way, it costs city taxpayers $10,000 a month for a police escort now to babysit the critical mass people and to prevent violence, you know, by motorists and by the cyclists themselves.
We got Rob Anderson on the line, who is a longtime critical mass critic, and I'm going to actually give those of you listening an opportunity to weigh in here. In fact, we'd like to hear from you. I'm sure many of you have some, well, sentiments, if not strong, other than strong, to contribute to this conversation, and we invite you to join us now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Again, you can join the program by calling us now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or emailing us, our email address, forum@kqed.org. Also, contribute to the conversation by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or to our Facebook page. And, of course, you can tweet us as well. Our handle is @KQEDForum. Rob Anderson, San Francisco maybe just not geographically big enough for critical mass, in your judgment?
Well, it's an imposition. It's a form of civil disobedience, which is really inappropriate. You know, the civil rights movement, that was about public accommodation and voting rights, very specific, you know, ordinances and laws that were hindering people from exercising their rights. Critical mass is not tied to any specific legislation or any particular policy issue. They just do it because they can. And I just think it's vigilantism. It's unacceptable, and they should stop doing it. And the Bicycle Coalition should come out against it, too. It's very irresponsible for the city's bike leadership to not come out against this form of basically bullying.
I should mention, by the way, the injunction against the bike plan was lifted in 2010 and is currently being implemented.
Well, they had to, the court ordered them to do an environmental review of the bicycle plan, which they should have done in the first place.
Can I speak to that question of bullying?
Yeah, go ahead, Hugh. Talk about bullying.
You know what? This is something that you often hear from people that actually haven't ever ridden on critical mass, is that what we're doing is bullying, or it's antagonistic and it's somehow intentionally designed to frustrate and antagonize motorists. When in fact, you know, if you come on critical mass and you ride with us, you'll see that everybody that's there is there to celebrate the last Friday of the month, to explore San Francisco together on bicycles in a safe and celebratory manner. We have music blasting, and the experience on the street, on the ground, is that there are people cheering. The tourists love us. Kids love us. And
we've had some problems with
kids
with
coming
motorists.
On critical mass.
I mean, there have been some altercations, violent altercations here and in Berkeley and, well, San Paulo, places like Seattle. I mean,
sure, I'm not trying to whitewash it, but I'm trying to say that the experience that you'll find with critical mass is that it's overwhelmingly positive, and there's maybe a small number of negative occurrences that are very rare.
But why not, Chris, have it on? Why not have? Excuse me, just a direct question, and
sure.
Interested in what you have to say. But why not just have it on a Saturday? I know it's a leaderless movement, and it kind of happens often with spontaneity.
Well, it was ideally designed as a commute home. The concept of it was a ride home together in a group, as opposed to as isolated cyclists in gridlock.
But it always has different routes. So it may not be home for everybody who's.
Well, frankly, most of the time I end up riding it home. Like when it goes through my neighborhood, I peel off and go home. And a lot of people do that. It you know, there's an attrition during the ride always.
Well, have you ever been out there, Rob Anderson, and seen?
I've seen it from the street a few times. You know, it just shows disrespect to working people who have been working all week, all month, and they're trying to get home from work. Just, you know, these people are driving these cars. They're not driving themselves. People drive cars because it's the only means of transportation that'll get them to work and back.
You were going to say, Chris Carlson, sorry.
Well, two things. First of all, we are also working people, by the way, and that was the whole concept, is those of us getting off work who take a bicycle to work would get home in a safe manner for once a month for 2 hours. The rest of the month, we're on our own. And it's actually very dangerous out there, as a lot of people will point out when they are scared to ride their bikes because they think it's too scary on the road. It's actually quite possible to manage it, but it's way more possible to manage it in a group. So that's a very key issue. The other thing is that, you know, the idea that somehow we're inconveniencing people, of course there's a minor inconvenience, but the fact is gridlock every Friday. And when we're riding our bikes to get to critical mass while we're still the isolated cyclists, we're going through gridlock. It's wall-to-wall cars. So who's imposing what on whom? The imposition, as Rob even says, is that there's no choice to get around except in a car. That's a public policy failure of a huge magnitude. And one of the few efforts to actually address that from below, not waiting for politicians to solve our problems or asking the authorities to do everything, is that we're actually taking things into our own hands and finding a better way to move through cities. And now, after we've been doing that as a choice, which actually benefits Rob Anderson and the people who feel inconvenienced, we're actually not in their way.
Did you say what to that, Rob Anderson?
Well, you know, you're also delaying people on muni buses. It's not just
Well, we try to avoid that. We do try very hard to get off the muni lines and avoid that because we're sensitive to that issue, and it doesn't always work out.
Why don't you do it on Saturday?
Well, Saturday's not when I'm going home. Saturday's it's not the time of the
month. Okay, well, we don't want to inconvenience you, of course.
Well, let me actually
read this. You inconvenience me all month long, Rob. That's the story.
We've got a flood of comments coming in here, as you'd expect. Let me just read some of them, and then we'll go to your phone calls in short order here. This is from Renee, who says, I've always been proud to say that I rode in San Francisco's second critical mass ride in October 1992. The ride was nothing more than a small ragtag group of bike messengers, friends, and those in the immediate community. It was relatively small and uneventful, and although we didn't make headlines, it was great to know that for the first time in the city's history, cyclist needs were finally in the spotlight. Riding in the city has come a long way since then, thanks to everyone who participated in critical mass. Facebook comment from David says, I was delayed a half hour at a stoplight once as critical mass interrupted traffic, and it made me angry at these rude jerks rather than support the point they're trying to make. Working for productive change is different than just blanking people off, and they don't see the difference. Critical mass is counterproductive. So you can go with a whole range of comments here. Let me go to an email by Doug who says, as a bike rider my whole adult life and a bike commuter for half my working life, the last thing I want to run into while riding alone in city traffic as a car driver is really mad at all cyclists because his previous evening's commute was greatly delayed by critical mass riding illegally and dangerously and clogging many blocks and intersections. And Joseph says, critical mass is emblematic of everything that's wrong with San Francisco, specifically the arrogant, antagonistic approach to pushing progressive agendas in politics. The majority of the participants are self-glorifying narcissists who disguise their self-obsession as environmentally focused superheroes. And boy, the divide. I mean, just reading them right off the top here, just as they come into queue here. Let me just a couple more. Christine says, please talk about the cyclists who go through stop signs and ride on the sidewalk. It may be admirable to ride a bike, but too often cyclists put their lives of pedestrians at risk and don't deserve the rules of the road. And you gentlemen say what? You?
Well, I think that's a really interesting question. I hear that all the time, that there's this problem of scofflaw cyclists. I think there's a lot of scofflaw behavior on the road in general. And I'm most concerned about motorists not obeying traffic laws by breaking the speed limit on a regular basis. I mean, I'm a motorist, and I know that I often break the speed limit, and also people do rolling stops in their cars. Now that's very dangerous in a car. The thing weighs 2 tons. It's very hard to get it to stop, and you have limited visibility. And that's where the real danger to public safety lies: is in scofflaw behavior from people driving 2-ton vehicles.
Well, we had this guy though blazing through a red light in the city here and killing a pedestrian.
Yeah, that was unacceptable. Right. Absolutely unacceptable.
Ben writes, to me, the beauty of critical mass was mentioned in your introduction, Michael. Disruption is the most important element of what the movement does, forcing people out of the norms that they are used to and mostly peacefully showing another possibility of how to exist together in a different way. So I guess he's saying disruption is good. Well, we're hearing both sides here. We'll continue with your calls and emails, and you can let us know what you think by calling us at 866-733-6786 as soon as the line becomes available, or emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or posting any of your thoughts or questions on our website, kqed.org/forum. Just click on this segment, or go to our Facebook page or tweet us, and our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Talking to Chris Carlson, co-founder of Critical Mass, Hugh Dondrati, who is also founder of sfcriticalmass.org blog, and Rob Anderson, a blogger on transportation issues. I'm Michael Krasny. Well, it started 2 decades from tomorrow, about 50 people cycling in a pack along Market Street, hoping to earn some respect from drivers who sometimes ignored them, edged them off the road. They called it the commute clot, and today it's known as critical mass, and it's a movement that has spread throughout the world. Supporters say it promotes cycling and the rights of bicyclists. Critics say it's illegal, clogs traffic, and antagonizes drivers. And on its 20th year anniversary, we're talking about not only the antagonisms, but the effect on the city and trying to see it from both sides. We have Chris Carlson in with us, co-founder of Critical Mass, part of the first bike ride back on September 25th, 1992. And has participated in critical mass rides in Milan and Vancouver and Porto Alegre, Brazil. And their celebration runs, by the way, September 24th through the 30th at the Critical Mass Welcome Center, which is at 518 Valencia. And there will be a welcome ride on the 30th of September. Hugh Dondrady is also with us, San Francisco CriticalMass.org blog. He started that blog back in 2009 to increase communication among Critical Mass and wider communities. And we also have with us by phone longtime Critical Mass opponent and blogger on transportation issues, Rob Anderson, who writes a blog called District 5 Diary. Let me, before I go to calls here, go to some of your comments coming in on the website and Facebook and so forth. Mark from Napa writes, been on Critical Mass, think it has an important role. However, as a frequent cyclist, I resent other cyclists who are rude and confrontational with car users. It only increases antagonism towards cyclists, even to the point of being dangerous. I don't want to be run over on some lonely country road because of some idiot yahoos creating so much animus against us. Chris, but you both acknowledge that that's out there, that you have some idiots sometimes.
Well, I wanted to speak to that, actually. Of course, there's people who behave badly. There always are. Go to a 49ers game. Go to a Giants game. Go anywhere you like where there's large numbers of people and there are people behaving badly. We are Americans. We are going to behave badly when we're out in mob scenes in public. That's just how it goes. That's part of the deal. But the actual truth of the matter within Critical Mass has been a very strong cultural effort, and it doesn't always succeed, to create a politics of invitation. We're inviting people to join us because we really think that we're isolated. That was where we started. It's now grown quite large. It's actually in 350 cities around the world.
But just like the occupation movement can't help the people who go out there to be part of it, the anarchists or whatever you want to call them, you can't help the people who join your movement.
No, of course not.
You can't control them, particularly because you're a leaderless
movement.
We're
a leader. It's an event. It's not even you can hardly call it a movement. It's an event that happens once a month in a very specific way. But between events, there's very little going on most of the time. That's part of why Hugh started that blog, because we had been letting the culture not reproduce itself for so long. I mean, you mentioned 97 earlier. There was a change after 97, which is that those of us that had put a lot of energy into creating this culture of celebration and invitation just stopped making a huge effort, thinking, well, everybody kind of knows what to do. They'll take care of it. And they did. People came back the following month after Willie cracked down, and we had the good soldier Shrike ride where everybody rode to rule. We stopped at every red light. We ran in single file. We put our foot down on the ground. The traffic was 10 times worse. And the cops figured that out, and that's why they stopped hassling us. And the idea that we're bullying anybody, I mean, we're bullied all day long as cyclists on the road. People yell at you. They throw things at you. Women get really bullied heavily on the road, and there's a lot of misogyny that comes out of that. So the bad behavior from people behind the wheel of a car, alone in their car, the rage they're experiencing on a daily basis in gridlock, we get it all the time.
And let me ask Rob Anderson about that bad behavior of motorists and contempt and anger that's directed toward the bike people.
Well, yeah, but this is what the bike people like to do. They like to change the subject to cars as soon as they're criticized. You know, 49er games are carefully planned. The authorities, Muni, everybody knows where they are, and they run special buses to the stadium and all that kind of stuff. That's completely different than Critical Mass. You know, and the trouble, the problem the bike people have and the public has, you get the drip, drip, drip of bad behavior by individual cyclists on the city streets all month long, and then the last day of the month they all get together and screw up traffic for people trying to get home from work. I just think it's bad public relations for them, and they'd be much better off if they didn't do this. You know, the cops started babysitting Critical Mass back when Mayor Newsom was mayor, and there were several incidents. Windshields were smashed, and there was violence during the Critical Mass. So now the city taxpayers pay $10,000 a month for a police escort to make sure there isn't any violence. That would be bad public relations for City Hall. It's a terrible public relations move, and I'm a little surprised that the bicycle people don't have a better sense of PR.
Now, let me read some more comments from listeners. Here's Samantha, who writes on her Facebook page, I'm an avid road biker, often considered joining Critical Mass. It wasn't until one horrible evening They caught me on my cell phone while looking for a parking spot and decided to party in the right lane as they yelled out. A very large group surrounded my car, yelling and staring. I was late for an appointment, boxed in by them for a solid 10 minutes. Martial law at its very worst. Tom from San Jose says, I've been an avid, mainly road cyclist for 45 years. Critical mass is madness. I fail to see how infuriating auto commuters does anything other than to engender enormous hostility in automobile drivers. Driving a car and riding a bike is a cooperative endeavor, and angering people in 4,000-pound steel vehicles when you are on a bike is idiotic. I'm continually amazed by normal drivers who are very hostile to cyclists, in large part due to the hostility created by the critical mass types. Riding a bike is not a political statement and does not confer the moral superiority. These people are a minority of anarchists and not at all helpful to the interests of cyclists. And, of course, you would both deny that minority of anarchists, Hugh Dondrady.
There may be a majority of anarchists in the public at large. I'm not sure. I think there's more than people often
they don't
say.
Vote.
But they don't vote. You know, this question—
They don't respond to polls either.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. That's right. Well, I think it's this question of, is critical mass going to create a backlash? I mean, that's something that we've heard for many, many years.
Hasn't it, really?
Well, where's the backlash? This is one thing that I often say. I heard this in 93 from a man who was the director of the East Bay Bike Coalition. I remember him clearly saying critical mass was the worst thing and it was going to set bicycling back by a generation. And here it is 20 years later. And what we've seen is that bicycling has really become a mainstream transportation option for a lot of people. The Bike Coalition is really insinuated into the hallways of power in San Francisco. Bicycling is on the rise in our city and around the world. Now, we don't take credit for that.
Like this, though? But doesn't it sound like a backlash when you hear all this kind of reaction coming in? And there are many, many more comments on the website along the similar lines.
Well, I hear it in personal opinion. I don't see it in any kind of policy change. I see bicycling increasing on the whole across our city.
You talk about a lot of backlashes on an individual
citizen
level.
I'd like to just speak to self-righteousness because I think that there's this kind of rage that people express, which is their own self-righteousness of feeling violated. And they want to throw it at us and say, we're the self-righteous. And then granted, there are definitely ecologists of all stripes and many bicyclists who feel super morally superior to other people because of the choices they're making. But I don't believe that. I think they're actually, we're just like everybody else.
Well, you know, I'm sure you've read the studies. People get behind the wheel and unfortunately there's road rage.
Just like that cartoon Disney made back in 1947.
Yeah, it's Pluto behind the wheel. Yeah. I remember it. We all saw it who had to go to traffic school.
Yeah, it's every day.
But what about other cities and other countries? Has there been what you would call more demonstrative backlash?
No, on the contrary. Basically, critical mass has a different relationship to every city it emerges in, and new people invented it afresh. But it's an idea that in some ways you could say was already in everybody's head, the idea of the bicyclists who are already choosing to ride a bike as a way of getting through urban environments to get together.
Well, the most fascinating thing I read about was in Budapest, where they have the actual city council and communities and an activism. It's become more of a celebration, I suppose, and a social.
Well, it started off there with the bike messengers in Budapest organizing the first one. And to everyone's amazement, 4,000 people showed up for the first one. And then since that time, because of their history with the police state there in the Eastern Bloc, they chose to work with the authorities. And they only do it twice a year. They do it on Earth Day and on International Car Free Day, which is just this past Saturday. And they get somewhere between 50,000 and 80,000 cyclists each time.
Well, I don't know if we have that many callers, but let's get in as many as we can. And we'll go first to you, Allison. You're on. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I completely support critical mass. I think it's emblematic of everything I love about San Francisco. It's fantastic. And I'm shocked by the amount of hostility I'm hearing against it.
Okay. Let me thank you for the call. We'll move on. We'll get as many of your calls on as we can. Let me go next to David, who's joining us from San Francisco. Hi, David.
Hi. I'm a member of the Bike Coalition, and I oppose both your antagonists and your protagonists today. It is costly. There is a backlash. It is $10,000 a month. I've seen planning commissions. That's where you make change. That's where you get percentages of people that are building new apartments out of their cars and ask for a lower percentage of parking spaces. The Bike Coalition has put more lanes on, and every time the bike the critical mass comes in, it does engender resentment. They ride down the wrong ways of the streets, and if cars had a critical mass and they felt the same way the bicyclists in critical mass felt, there would be death and mayhem, and it wouldn't be stood for. And in this time of economic disparity and problems with our budget, it's time that they join and work with the system.
Hugh, you want to say something here?
Well, I think that was a really interesting comment, because I think that is, in fact, what we have is a critical mass for cars every day. And, in fact, we do have a great deal of death and mayhem. I believe we have about 80 to 100 deaths that happen on a regular basis in California from motorized traffic. And here
30 to 40,000 per year in the United States, people getting killed on the roads. And that's a social decision to murder 30,000 people in order to keep the convenience of private automobiles.
Let me thank the caller. Move along to another call, and that's you, Megan. Hi.
Hi. I grew up in Buffalo, New York, and my mom started the Bicycle Club for Western New York and was instrumental with my dad in getting the bike routes throughout Buffalo and up to Niagara Falls, et cetera. And as a kid, I was able to meet some of the Montreal team, and I wondered if the Critical Mass folks knew about Le Mans à Bicyclette. In the 70s, Bob Silverman organized teams, and they would do crazy volleyball in the streets, and they would take huge things like ladders and hippopotamus, et cetera, on the metro to prove that bikes could come. And they had a really fun time. It was always more serendipitous and fun and creative and a little less of that, you know, surrounding someone, you know, trying to park, you know, which was terrific. And I think the more that Critical Mass takes this kind of fun path, I think it's more likely to do well. Having watched this as a kid, you know, Montreal is now the number 5 most friendly bicycle cities. It definitely was part of the portfolio that worked. So both working, you know, in City Hall, as well as doing these fun events that everyone can see and participate in, I think is critical. And the results work.
Well, we thank you for the call. And I want to read some website comments. Eamon writes, if you want to see the law being broken on the same scale as Critical Mass, all you have to do is spend about 2 minutes looking at any stretch of Bay Area freeway where you can count on the fingers of one hand the number of people obeying speed limits or any number of rules about texting or operating phones when driving, if only motorists can find their law breaking to a few hours of the month. Dave writes, we have dedicated cycle-only roads more than we need high-speed rail, a mere We need dedicated cycle-only roads more than we need high-speed rail. A mere fraction of the funds allocated for the California High-Speed Rail Project could transform our cities into bike-friendly environments. We should attach riders to fund bike paths to any future funding for the high-speed rail. And Rhett writes on our website, in Paris, the police give an escort on Friday night to a mass roller skating tour, which protects skaters from cars. It's an example of smart city planning that doesn't harm tourism one bit and keeps small-minded people at bay. I get another caller on. Denise, that's you. Hi.
Hi. I live in San Francisco, and I'm a bicyclist, but I hate Critical Mass. And I want to back up the person who described them as bullying. And the response from your guest that, well, you know, you would find that we weren't bullying if you rode from us is sort of beside the point. Because Critical Mass won't stop at traffic lights, it makes it impossible for other people to, you know, to get where they need to be. I was on a bike once trying to cross the street to get home in time to get ready for an event, and, you know, I couldn't do it because they wouldn't stop and I couldn't get across, and I was on a bike, so I wasn't in a car, and kind of turning around all critical comments about Critical Mass to, well, you should see what drivers do, is sort of beside the point.
What do you say to those comments of Denise's, Hugh Dondrani?
Well, that's something I've encountered a lot with our blog. That's on our comments. That's probably the number one complaint, is that we don't stop for red lights. There is an actual practical reason for that. The front of the ride generally does stop for red lights, but the rest of the ride parades through for reasons of safety. That if we all stay together as one big group, we are able to displace motorized traffic for the period of time that we're moving through the streets, and that keeps us able to ride safely together. And when we're broken into smaller and smaller segments, that's when you get cars in the midst of our rides, and that's when you get conflicts and problems. And so there's a practical reason for it, and it's not just some sort of attempt to punish people that are in cars.
We also make a big effort amongst ourselves to go and help people, like the woman who was stuck in her car trying to park. A lot of us would go into that situation and say, hey, you guys, let her out. Let her get to her parking place. Or stop for the pedestrians. I do this every single ride. I yell, stop for the pedestrians when we come to a place where there's a bunch of people trying to cross. And everybody does.
But one incident like that, even for a bike rider, can turn, you know,
well, people are easy to make generalizations from a bad experience. That's what happens.
Well, here is a comment, Rob Anderson, that I'd like you to address or respond to. It's from Adriana, a listener who put it on our website, who says, Mr. Anderson mentions that critical mass is an imposition on San Franciscans, missing the point that San Franciscans are critical mass. This is an invitation to all San Franciscans to celebrate the reshaping of urban life together. San Franciscans should stand proud that a cultural movement was born here that helped express a form of exodus from a car-centric culture. Moreover, this is a prototype social movement, leaderless and principled, which is a precursor to other movements seeking change in the world, such as the Occupy movements. I'll be there this Friday. Let's bike together again and again and again. And you say what, Rob Anderson?
Well, I say it's leaderless. Yeah, they're not taking any responsibility. Normally, if you disrupt traffic in San Francisco or any major city to that extent, you have to get a parade permit and go through the proper channels, and somebody has to be responsible. It's irresponsible behavior on a mass level. And, you know, the Bicycle Coalition only has 12,000 members in a city of 800,000. So, you know, you're a small minority, and you're imposing and bullying on a majority. This will never be on the ballot because City Hall is now rolled over for the Bicycle Coalition and the bike lobby, and they're altering streets all over San Francisco without any voter input. You know, Panhandle, 100 parking spaces are going for those bike lanes. 160 parking spaces are going to be eliminated on Masonic Avenue to make bike lanes next year. And the people of San Francisco never get to vote on this stuff. They're radically changing the design of the streets of San Francisco with no voter input.
Well, Rob Anderson, let me get your response also to a email from a listener named Aaron who says, cars own the roads every day. I don't see what the problem is with having cyclists dominating the street for one day in the month. People don't follow rules for bikes or cars and interactions on both sides, and usually the only way to feel safe is to be in a mob. Your guest who claims a critical mass will ruin the tourist industry is a bit of a zealot for these statements. Cars inconvenience bikes all year long.
Well, cars are the overwhelming choice of a majority of American citizens and San Francisco citizens. Like I say, there's 460,000 registered motor vehicles in San Francisco. Our whole transportation system requires, and our society requires, that kind of mobility. There's very few people who can rely on bikes as a primary mode of transportation. It's just not practical for old people, handicapped people, and more hardworking working people. It's just not practical.
And again, Rob Anderson writes a blog called District 5 Diary, and let's go to more of your calls, and we'll go to Charles next. Charles, join us. You're on Forum. Welcome.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
I guess the Bicycle Coalition is responsible for a lot of the changes in the traffic and the bicycle lanes opening up. And I believe critical mass, you know, had an effect in expediting a lot of these changes. You know, I think that's overall probably a good thing. I agree that maybe they've taken it a little too far, you know, losing parking spots left and right. It's getting tougher and tougher in certain areas. But I've witnessed some pretty antagonistic bicyclists, you know, thumping on cars, and it's like a mob mentality. Yeah, you get two or three banging on a car, and all of a sudden a motorist is literally terrorized because you're surrounded with some angry people. And, you know, these things, it's not civil, you know. I just want to make a comment on that.
Okay, I thank you for that comment. In fact, when you were saying before, Chris Carlson, that, you know, just one bad incident could infect someone, I'm interested in an email that Lori sent where she said, I support increased cycling for many reasons. At the same time, the first time I encountered critical mass in a San Francisco, a cyclist urinated on my car, the driver's window, and shouted, this is a blanking critical mass, get off the road. Not exactly a way to get support from the public. But she still supports it. I mean,
of course. And I mean, you know, Hugh and I have spent a lot of years arguing within the ride and making flyers, critical mass do's and don'ts, advocating for etiquette and courtesy and to be invitational and celebratory. Guess what? We don't control everybody's behavior. We try.
There's a lot of it.
we try to make the argument.
Even a civil-sounding gentleman like you talked before about stupid motorists. I mean, there's a lot of antagonism on both sides. There is a self-righteousness that many bike riders feel, and there's antagonism, obviously, for motorists because they
feel you're clogging their roads and blocking them from
going. Well, yeah, motorists have been taught by the entire culture and all the propaganda in it that this is the norm, that that's the only reasonable choice to make as an adult citizen of America is to buy a car and drive around in it. There are many other options. And, you know, the point that it's not convenient for people, my grandmother rode a bicycle in Copenhagen until she was 88 years old. If you have a place to ride that's safe and secure and you're not threatened with motorized vehicles running you over all the time, tons of people will ride. And that's been proven wherever they've done it. Every time you put in infrastructure, way more people ride bikes.
Did you talk about car cultures? I mean, America has long been a car culture, but it's probably the most hegemonic car culture of all is
absolutely.
Here in California.
And yeah, no, it's absolutely true. And that's been sold to us for a very long time. So people are not very clear about the extent to which they've been brainwashed by that propaganda.
And Hugh, you wanted to add?
Yeah, I just think that it's an interesting thing that we really are seeing a big increase in cycling. And I think that, you know, 20 years from now, San Francisco is going to look a lot more like a city like Copenhagen or Amsterdam. And I think that, you know, this is a change that's writing is on the wall. And I think Rob may be a dwindling minority.
Rob, do you feel like a dinosaur here? I mean, things are changing and changing rapidly. And
no, I think, like you say, I mean, if this was on the ballot, the people of San Francisco reject it. And they know that. That's why City Hall will never put it on the ballot. You know, this is a small militant minority which is taking up an enormous amount of room in our political life and on our streets, and it's completely unjustified. Making it more difficult and expensive to drive in San Francisco is a terrible idea. And the mayor complains about losing middle class families in San Francisco. A family can't do serious shopping on a bicycle. They need a car to get to jobs, to get to shopping and to do errands and to take their kids to lessons and so forth. So you're undermining the economy of San Francisco based on this politically correct minority, which is imposing itself on the rest of us.
You don't want to see San Francisco look like Amsterdam?
I don't know anything about Amsterdam, but I know San Francisco has mostly two-lane streets with parking on the sides in the neighborhoods. There is not a lot of room to do these bicycle lanes without damaging and alienating the neighborhoods. It's just not practical.
Well, let me read some more comments. Molly says, I'm a regular biker, also a regular driver in San Francisco, and I'm frustrated with critical mass. I've been on my bike and have been unable to reach my destination because of critical mass. I appreciate that at the beginning it helped to get a better biking structure in the city, but today it's simply a big party. Most of my friends ride in critical mass, and they admit the same thing. It's just a fun party. We have a great bike coalition in the city, which I think does much more for bikers than critical mass. And do you gentlemen want to comment on that?
It is a big party. That's right. You know, we have a dearth of places to meet together without having to go buy something. You always have to go buy something. Go buy a ticket to entry or go buy a beer or go buy something here and there. Here's one of the very few free public experiences you can have in any city in the country.
Are you divided from the Bicycle Coalition, though, in some sense?
Well, we're friends of each other. We know each other, but we're not them and they're not us.
Fred writes, it's a matter of my daily experience that bicyclists are just as rude, reckless, and lacking in common sense as auto drivers. Critical mass was and is about balance, redress of power. Bicyclists deserved a stronger legal and de facto role on the roads, not on the sidewalks. The situation has improved, and critical mass needs to keep up the pressure, perhaps with less posturing. Second point, I recall hearing or reading a report from the Berkeley police stating that in every fatal bike auto crash they investigated, the bicyclist had violated the rules of the road. This isn't a statistically significant sample, but it's worth noting.
Nor the source.
Katie says, well, there was no source. Katie says, Friday night, I and my husband, holding our two-year-old, were crossing Embarcadero near the ferry building. We had the light and were about 2 feet from the sidewalk when a cyclist rode between the curb and my husband and toddler. He was going at least 20 miles an hour against a red light. Until cyclists follow the rules, the rest of us do, they will not receive my support. Give them tickets. And Pam says, what I would like to see is an effort to make all bicyclists observe the rules of the road, which means stopping at lights and stop signs, to use really visible lights fore and aft at night when I do most of my riding since I work evenings, not riding on sidewalks, and generally acknowledging that both cars and bikes have rights to the road. Courtesy on the part of the cyclists and the drivers will make things better for all of us. Let me bring another caller on, and that's you, Christina. Hi.
Hi. I really love those notes because they're leading into what I'm about to say. I see there's no better accountability than getting the bicyclists to get licensed and to have insurance if they're going to take responsibility. I've always been behind more bicyclists, I mean, more venues for them to use and everything, but I cannot. I'm a pedestrian. I do not have a car. I ride Muni. I walk. And I cannot tell you, for every good bicyclists I see out there, there's five or six that are just, you know, if they were in a car, it would be a nightmare.
Well, what about this notion, Hugh Dondrati, that maybe bicyclists should have licenses and perhaps the tickets that are given to bicyclists are not necessarily as much in force as they ought to be?
Well, one thing is that cyclists don't cause a lot of death and mayhem on the road. Last year there was that horrible case that you mentioned previously of the elderly gentleman who was killed by a negligent cyclist, it seems. But it's an exceedingly rare event, and so that's one reason why the police, I believe, don't give us a lot of attention, is that they put their energy where they can into protecting public safety. So
on the licensing front, the sensible thing for us to do as a society is to require all motor vehicle licenses to include 20 minutes of bicycling in a city to get your driver's license, because then you would actually change your mentality about what it's like to cycle and what kind of cohabitation is possible on the streets.
I don't know if you want to have a barrier to cycling either.
Listener says, I cycle to and from work every day, follow traffic rules, period. Not just stop at a red light until the intersection is clear. I wait until I have a green light. I stop at the stop sign and then turn. If you're clipped in, then that's a bit of a pain, but too bad. Those are the rules. I'm very disappointed in Critical Mass representative pushing aside concerns about cyclists violating traffic laws, because cars do it too, and it's more dangerous when they do it because of their size.
I'll tell you what. I run red lights and stop signs every day, and I'm proud of it because it's safe. It's the safest thing for me to do is to cross over a red light where there's no cross traffic and be in an empty street on the other side. That way I'm not sitting next to a bunch of idling motorists who don't see me and start making right turns into me and don't give me any space on the road. So I'm taking my safety into my own hands.
You are candidly opening up to your scofflawing, right?
Yeah, no, it's actually a safer behavior for cyclists. That's why cyclists need to defend that. We need to change the rules so that cyclists use stoplights as stop signs. You stop and look. It's clear, you go. Stop signs are yields for bicyclists. You shouldn't have to get down off your bike at an empty four-way stop sign. It's absurd. We roll through them. It's routine. All cyclists do that all over the city.
And Rob Anderson, just a quick comment. Here's a listener who says, sorry, Caitlin says, to be so blunt, but Rob Anderson, you are a dinosaur. You've single-handedly hindered the advancement of a healthy biking culture in San Francisco. You seem to believe that car commuters have a right to the streets over bicycles.
Well,
you do, right? I mean,
I don't think in a city like San Francisco, where you have mostly two-lane streets in the neighborhoods, I don't think you should take away traffic lanes and street parking to make bike lanes. No.
That's
it's a small minority movement which is imposing itself on a majority. That's, put it on the ballot.
That's actually going to conclude things. Actually, I want to mention District 5 Diary, which is the blog of Rob Anderson's, Hugh Dondrati, San Francisco CriticalMass.org blog, and Chris Carlson was also with us, co-founder of Critical Mass. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell, Amanda Stupai, and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer, Raul Ramirez. Thank you for listening. You can continue this discussion on our Facebook page or on our website, kqed.org. For all of us at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.